10 years ago, the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks Upon the United States issued the 9/11 Commission Report, which is the official account of the terrorist acts of the day. Now, a decade later, members of that commission have reconvened to issue a new report which looks at the changes to national security made in the last decade and outlines emerging threats to our nation and how we should be approaching them. The report argues that the struggle against terrorism is far from over and that it's entered a new and dangerous phase. Joining us now to discuss that report and its recommendations is Jamie Gorelick. She serves on the 9/11 commission that issued this report and the one from 10 years ago. She's an attorney and former Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be with you.
So in terms of national security, how much progress has our country made in the last decade?
We found through our conversations with senior national security leaders and former leaders that we have made a lot of progress against core al-Qaeda, the folks who attacked us on 9/11. But there has been a proliferation of other groups and spin-offs. There are places in the world like Syria and Iraq that are offering both training and sanctuaries. And there are lone wolves, if you will, in the United States who we've seen can attack us and make us less safe. So our verdict, if you will, is that a tremendous amount of progress has been made by our government, but we are still in danger, and that the biggest threat to our national security is to become complacent about that danger.
I wanted to get into that point next. Are we getting complacent? I think the phrase counterterrorism fatigue comes up in your report.
Yes. We think that the American people are complacent and have been lulled into a sense of security by the fact that the government has protected us from a catastrophic attack over the last decade plus. But when you look at the objective threats and when you talk to those whose job it is or has been to protect us, they are not at all sanguine.
Also, you warn, before we get into specific recommendations, you warn about the threat of cyber attacks in this report. How vulnerable are we?
We had individual conversations with these national security leaders, and one of the most striking things was that they agreed to a person that our cyber vulnerability is enormous. We see it in criminal hacking. We see it in attacks by nation states. We see it in the theft of intellectual property by nation states. Our country sits on a bed of interconnected infrastructure that is privately owned. And that privately owned infrastructure is the key to our own well-being and national security. That infrastructure is not being well protected because it is owned by the private sector, and the government and the private sector have not worked together effectively to harden those systems against attack.
A common theme for both of those threats, terrorism in the 21st century and cyber attacks, is they're dispersed in nature. There's not an enemy army sitting over there, and we've just got to keep an eye on that, or even one centralized al-Qaeda leadership group that we have to watch out for. Have we adjusted our mindset to as a national security institution to meet that kind of dispersed threat?
I think that's a very good observation. There was a time when the President of the United States could ask the intelligence community, tell me who the bad actors in al-Qaeda are and what you are doing to eliminate their threat to the United States. That is no longer a feasible mechanism for keeping us safe. What we need is a tremendous amount of intelligence about who is doing what the key bomb maker technologists are doing to evade our screening mechanisms, who is fighting in Iraq and Syria, who may have a European or U.S. passport, whether they are traveling, as they can easily do, back to the United States, what is happening to radicalize individuals in communities in the United States to take violent action, as Major Hassan did in the Fort Hood shootings, as the Sarnoff brothers did in the Boston Marathon bombing. These are much more difficult threats to combat because of their dispersed nature, and the same is certainly true in the cyber realm.
A lot of attention has been paid to how we collect information with a dispersed threat like that. Briefly, and we can get into it more later, are we collecting enough information to keep on top of those questions you just raised?
It really isn't possible for a group of private citizens, as we are, however schooled we may be in national security, to assess that. But we were struck by the mood of the country in the aftermath of the Snowden revelations, that a good chunk of our populace is more worried about the government spying on them than they are about the terrorist threat that might undermine our security. And in our view, that's a failure of our leadership to lead, to explain what the threat is, explain why we need in the government the authorities that are assertedly needed, and to put in place protections so that legitimate civil liberties concerns are addressed. When you listen to the debate, it seems quite one-sided and almost unreal if you know anything about what the threat actually is.
We'll follow up that point with Jamie Gorelick of the 9/11 Commission, talking about a new report on national security out today. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Where should the U.S. focus national security resources? What changes, good or bad, have you seen in the last decade? We're talking about the 9/11 Commission's report on national security issued today. They find while progress has been made in the last decade, the struggle against terrorism is far from over. There are serious threats, they say, to the country that need addressing. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Where should the U.S. focus national security resources and efforts? Have you seen changes for the better or worse in the last 10 years? How could security be improved in the United States? Do you worry about the balance between security on the one hand and your privacy on the other? 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Jamie Gorelick is with us. She serves on that 9/11 commission. They issued this report and one from 10 years ago. She's an attorney, former Deputy Attorney General of the United States. We'll go to a caller now. We've got Harold on the line in Superior. Harold, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I think that we need to focus just a little bit, a wee bit, in the arena of why do people hate us? You know, you think of mentally of all of the countries in the world, and how many of them have NSA? How many of them are as paranoid about being attacked? And the reason has got to be that there's people that hate us. And why do they hate us?
Harold, thanks for the call. Jamie, so why is the U.S. particularly targeted? And are there public outreach efforts, diplomacy we could be doing to hopefully make people less prone to join up with terrorist organizations?
I would answer that question in two ways. One is the ideology underlying the folks who attacked us on 9/11 was, in essence, that there should be a religious state in which a very, very radical version of Islam would prevail, that we in the West, and not just the United States, but in the West, have values that with which they don't agree. So that's number one. Number two, there has been a reaction, for example, to our invasion of Iraq and our presence in Afghanistan. And one of the things that we said in the original 9/11 Commission report is that we should be showing the world as well our face of generosity. If you look at our popularity, for example, in a place like Indonesia, we were very unpopular. It's a Muslim country. There were many radical groups that had proliferated propaganda about us. After the tsunami hit, and we were a huge presence in providing aid and humanitarian assistance, that view of us changed. And so you have to use all the tools in your toolkit, including showing the best values of America.
I want to get into some of the recommendations in the report out today. One thing is you'd like to streamline the way Congress oversees national security efforts. What are things like now? What do you want to see change?
We recommended in our initial report that the Department of Homeland Security, which has over 200,000 people and many different missions, be overseen by a single committee of each house. In much the same way that the Defense Department is overseen by a single committee in each house, the House and the Senate. At that time, the Department of Homeland Security had 88 committees and subcommittees supervising and overseeing its work. Today, the Department of Homeland Security has 92 such committees. That is not effective and efficient. Anybody who runs anything, a family, a small business, a large business, a public interest organization, knows that you cannot run anything effectively if you have a multiple set of bosses. Well, this department has 92. That is not effective.
So the people in the department are spending a lot of time testifying, I imagine, before all these committees. But does that also mean that people on these 92 committees, they don't take responsibility? Maybe they don't provide the level of oversight that they should, since it's such a shared job?
Yes, if everyone is responsible, no one is responsible.
So
there's nobody who sees the whole picture and takes responsibility for the whole picture. If you're only responsible for oversight of the Coast Guard, you may do something or want to do something with respect to the Coast Guard that undermines what we're doing on border enforcement.
Another recommendation you have, updating the September 2001 authorization for the use of military force. What does that authorization still mean 13 years later? What do we need to change?
The premise of that authorization was that we were attacked by an enemy in Al-Qaeda and that we should use all necessary means to address that threat. Today, Al-Qaeda has splintered into many different groups. And operates in different environments, operates in Syria and Iraq and other places. And the thought is that it would be time for Congress to take a step back and decide exactly what it wants to authorize, as opposed to using a very old authorization that may not be as well suited as a current assessment would be.
One thing I wonder is, with a group like ISIS in Iraq and Syria, as horrific the things as it's doing are, there are threats in that region. We may not know, I don't know of them directly threatening the United States soil. How do we sort out where we take action against a group that is bad over there versus a threat over here?
That is a very, very good question. Certainly, if people in some faraway land are fighting each other, we may not have any stake in intervening in that fight. Indeed, there might be some dangers in doing so. However, one of the key observations of the original 9/11 Commission report was that if you have a power vacuum, if you have a feud such that a terrorist group can have a sanctuary in a country, as it did as Al-Qaeda did in Afghanistan, that can be a threat to the United States if the people in that sanctuary have the ultimate goal of attacking us here in the United States. So what we recommend is that we become much more vigilant about those who are fighting in Iraq and Syria to determine who might be there carrying a U.S. passport, carrying a European passport, who could very readily come to the United States and do us harm.
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got John on the line in Madison. John, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, thank you very much for taking my call. The one thing that I don't think that is expressed by the administration is that a complete transparency of our security system, in other words, telling everybody everywhere everything we're doing to make this country secure, is national suicide. You just cannot do that. And there is the other problem surrounding that is that a particular party in power will try to make the other side look bad, even though they know they're just making stuff up. But complete transparency in our security system is just not practical.
John, thanks for the call. Jamie, a couple points I'd like to follow up on there. First of all, how far can we be transparent in what the government is doing on national security and counterterrorism without, as he says, committing national suicide?
The caller's observation is quite correct. I mean, one of the difficulties that national leadership, whether it be in the executive branch or the legislative branch, has in making the case to the American people that we need certain authorities is that if you talk about what you're doing in too much detail or what you need to be doing in too much detail, you reveal important evidence and information to your enemy. I think our view is there is a lot that could be said that would not have that effect. Complete transparency is obviously impossible, but we could be somewhat more transparent about the nature of the threat and, in general, what needs to be done to address that threat.
And John also alluded to differences between the parties, and the report cites that as part of our problem, a lack of bipartisanship on national security issues.
The number one obligation of a national government is to keep the people safe. And historically, that has meant that our partisan disagreements stop at our national borders, that our national security policy has to be set in the most bipartisan setting possible. And we agree with that. We would urge members of Congress to put aside their partisan differences and think about their very first responsibility, which is to keep us safe.
We'll leave it there for now. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to do so.
That's Jamie Gorelick. She's an attorney and former Deputy Attorney General of the United States. She serves on the 9/11 Commission.